that governments and companies are allowing indigenous land, other communities' territories to be sold off to the highest bidder.
And you mentioned the Amazon, the key role of the Amazon in the fight to save our Earth. And the activism there, has there been any reduction in the violence against environmental activists in that region of the world?
I wouldn't say so, no. I mean, just literally in November, December last year, four indigenous leaders in the Peruvian Amazon were killed by illegal loggers. And now these people, Edwin Schotter and his compatriots, have been fighting for the official recognition of land title for their areas, of their indigenous communities, for almost over, and the Peruvian government refused to officially recognize their land title, even though this had been promised over a long period of time. So illegal loggers were able to take advantage of this vacuum of power in those areas and illegally log in their communities. And anyone who stands up, like Edwin Schotter and his colleagues, were killed. So no, it's particularly prevalent in the Amazon, and it's an issue which will continue to be seen on the airwaves.
We want to thank you for being with us, campaigner for Global Witness. We'll link to your report, How Many More, which documents the killing of environmental activists worldwide. I'll be speaking at Colorado College Thursday night at 7 o'clock. Check our website, and we'll be broadcasting from The Hague Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. This is Democracy Now!, produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Aaron Mate, Nermeen Sheikh, Steve Martinez, Sam Alkaff, Hani Massoud, Robbie Karen, Dina Gesder, Amy Littlefield. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us.
And you're listening to your community radio station. It's KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K224CQ Molawa'a, K284AL Hala'iva. It's time for In the Garden on the Farm.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, staff, board, members, volunteers, or underwriters.
Aloha, and welcome to In the Garden on the Farm, your weekly radio program that cultivates the passion and knowledge to grow well with plants and animals. We're your hosts, Paul and Robin, and on today's show, Earth Day 2015, we will revel in the local seasonal staple food, onions, learn some basics about drip line irrigation, and burrow into some facts about earthworms. But first, we'd like to let you know that this KKCR program is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with our generous underwriters.
Harvest Market Natural Foods and Cafe in Hanalei is proud to support KKCR and its Ohana, offering organic groceries and produce, a cafe featuring fresh salad bar, hot meals and soups, fresh-made smoothies, and baked goods. Located in the heart of Hanalei, Harvest Market Natural Foods and Cafe, 826-0089.
Kauai Marine and Mower, located in Old Kapa'a Town, is proud to underwrite this KKCR program. Kauai Marine and Mower features Honda Garden and Lawn Equipment and also Echo Power Equipment. 823-0556.
Anahola Stringed Instruments is proud to support KKCR. Mickey Sussman has been building Island Koa guitars, ukulele, and violins on Kauai since 1972. Time-honored design, complete restoration, repair, and reforestation. AnaholaStringedInstruments.com or 822-1645.
Garden Island Hydro, assisting with all your growing needs. Nutrients, mediums, all-natural compost tea, lights, aquaponic and hydroponic components, systems, and setups. In the Puhi Industrial Park, Lihue. Family-owned and operated, open Monday through Saturday, 246-GROW, and online at GardenIslandHydro.com.
And we're back. We're in the garden. It's a beautiful day in the garden. Got some good rain, huh?
Ooh, finally. And we only clocked in less than an inch, but boy, did we need it. Things were really drooping after some heavy winds and not enough rain.
Almost 2 inches of rain at my place.
Wow, Z!
It dumped.
Clearly.
And then before the sun rose, stepped outside after all that dumping rain, completely clear sky and the stars. It's amazing how fast things change here in the Hawaiian Islands. And here on this beautiful Earth Day, we get to celebrate our connection with all the things in the universe that makes our gardens flourish and grow, including the planets, and the moon, and the other celestial influences, the constellations that reflect or amplify the energies that influence plant growth. So we'll take a moment to honor those influences as we do in our celestial session. And today's moon, Hawaiian moon phase, thanks to the Hanalei moon and tide calendar, which is available as a beautiful printed piece as well as online. And the U.S. Naval Observatory Astronomical Applications Department also serving up some information for today's reading. Kukahi is the Hawaiian moon of today, and Kukahi rose over Kauai at 9:45 a.m. this morning. She will reach her transit, her highest point in the sky, at 4:30 p.m. this afternoon, and she'll set tonight at 11:15 p.m. tonight. So beautiful day moon today, 21% of the moon's beautiful face being illuminated. The first quarter moon will arrive precisely at 1:55 p.m. on Saturday afternoon. Kukahi is actually the first of four ku moons that ended the ku kapu at the beginning of the month. So it's the beginning of the Hawaiian moon month here, and I guess we're in the fifth day of the Hawaiian moon month. Hilo and Hoaka were the first two moons, and they were traditionally not allowed for planting. So this is jumping into that planting phase, beginning of the month. Recommended crops for planting during this moon: uala, sweet potato, kalo, the taro plant, and mai'a, banana. They are said to grow upright, and this being the first of four ku moons, kalo planted today will have a single shoot of growth.
Ooh, good to know. Well, in the biodynamic look at things, today is the last day of the ascending moon, with the moon in Taurus, an earth sign, making it time to work with our root plants, so that's a great idea. You know, every time I've done kalo planting so far, I've gotten masses of keiki, of babies, of oha, they're called, correct? Mm-hmm. And I was thinking, when on earth can I plant when I won't get so many of those? Sounds like today's the day.
Yes.
Well, tomorrow through Friday, the moon will enter the constellation of Gemini, an air sign, making it time to work with our flowering plants. And mammoth sunflowers, this is their time of year. Just putting it out there, if you want those giants, this is the time to plant them. Certainly, ornamental sunflowers can be grown almost any time of year here, at least in the long season. But for me, the reason I grow the big ones is because they're big. And this is prime time. Saturday and Sunday, the moon will be in Cancer, a water sign, making it time to work with our leafy plants. So once again, time to plant some greens. And Monday and Tuesday next, the moon will be in Leo, a fire sign, making it time to work with our fruit plants. And along the lines of good planting for less water use, we have drought-tolerant plants like okra and cucumbers, but also a good time to get some fruit trees in the ground as well.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of water conservation, a little bit later in the show, we're going to talk about the ubiquitous drip system. There's a lot to take into account. And Robin, I know you've been putting together successful systems for some years now. You've certainly provided guidance for me on previous projects, and looking forward to some detail there from you.
Sure. Well, truth be told, my systems in the early days were not very successful. And when you're out there doing the work and dealing with the consequences of bad choices, that's a really good motivator to learn how to do it better. So I'm looking forward to sharing some tips that I learned the hard way with our listeners to maybe help them do it a little bit easier way the first time around.
Sounds good. But first, we're going to pick some of the globes of the season out of the out of our field, or perhaps visit some farmers at the farmers market who have done the same.
That's right. That's right. I'm super excited. This is the time of year that we can get fresh onions, locally grown onions. You know, onions are such a staple food. They're one of the oldest edible food sources known to mankind. Certainly, hardly a day goes by where I don't cook with some kind of onion in something that I'm consuming. They're super healthy for you, which I'll talk about, but they're just starting to arrive at market these last few weeks. Pretty sizable, so we can say the farmers were definitely on it with their succession planting. I mean, these are must be some early plantings to yield such nice size onions this early in the season. But we have fresh local onions available to us hopefully for about 4 to 5 months. So this is a vegetable we commonly buy in bulk at the grocery store for ease of management. But we are lucky that right now we do have access to these locally grown ones. And this is just another way that we can contribute to, you know, less food shipping and more success of our very own farmer neighbor folks. So highly recommend getting to market to check them out. There's red ones out there, and generally the onions grown around here are sweet onions.
Wait, now you're talking about the bulb onions, because we can have onion green onions any time of year.
That's right. Correct?
And then as with other produce, where oftentimes what we see in the market, if we go to a grocery store that is not selling local produce, it seems that a lot of times the produce or the varieties that are available, oftentimes one of the major reasons they're chosen is because of their shipability, so that they stay in a saleable, consumable condition, even if it's been on the barge for a couple of weeks or shipped even thousands of miles. Is this reflected also in our choice of bulb onions? Do we get to enjoy a finer selection of tastes and experiences when we eat local onions?
I would say yes, of course. And the big difference is, as we've discussed on the show before, that onion varieties are grown by their latitude. So the latitude basically reflects the day length, and often the shipped-in onions that are widely available at the grocery stores are going to be northern latitude onions, which tend to be more pungent or spicy. They are definitely better storage onions, so yes to their shipability, whereas the low-latitude onions, which we would count ourselves in there, are generally the sweet onions. So sweet onions not known for their storage capacities. However, last year's crop, I was able to, after proper curing, to keep them in my refrigerator, stored in my refrigerator for quite a long time, but couldn't have kept them out on the counter for that long. So the difference in taste we're going to see is we're going to be getting a sweeter onion.
And that window of 4 to 5 months that you mentioned, does that mean that farmers or smart gardeners like yourself who have planted them will actually be harvesting them throughout that period?
Hopefully. I mean, myself, I only do one planting. So I will have probably, they'll trickle in, but I won't get the succession that farmers do. So I'm definitely referring to market farmers who have planted onions at intervals so that for the course of 4 or 5 months, we'll be able to harvest and have them available at market for us.
Got it.
Which is great. And so just to give a little nutritional profile on them, because I like to do that kind of thing, the phytochemicals allium and allyl disulfide convert to a phytochemical known as allicin after slicing or crushing. So essentially, oxidation in the air is what builds this very healthful phytochemical known as allicin out of two other phytochemicals. And so good to slice your onions and let them hang out on the counter for about 15 minutes, and you'll get more of the oxidation, which will create more of the allicin, which allicin is responsible for lowering cholesterol and is also antibacterial, antifungal, and antiviral. Onions are a good source of chromium, quercetin. Quercetin is a supplement out there you can see, but it's in onions, and it's been research has showed it to be anti-carcinogenic, anti-inflammatory, and anti-diabetic. Onions are also high in vitamin A, vitamin C, manganese, and B-complex vitamins. So definitely a healthful choice, either raw or cooked, give their flavor beautifully. And you want to look, if you're seeing them at the market, and this is what you'll see because they are so fresh, they were probably harvested that morning. You want to look for shiny, firm, fresh bulbs with nice tops. And I've mentioned this book I've read many times already. It's called Eating on the Wild Side. And it's separated by chapter of plant types. And I learned in the onion tops, because of the green color, are actually more healthful than the white bulb. Mm-hmm. Now, a red onion is going to have more phytonutrients going on inside of itself as well, but I say don't stop when you're chopping. Don't stop with the white bulb and just slice those nice fresh tops that you just bought right up into your meal as well, and they act just like a scallion tops do for color and texture and that kind of thing.
Yum, yum. Sounds delicious. Thank you to the gardeners and farmers of Kauai for growing this beautiful produce for us to enjoy. Another reason to hop out there to your farmers market. If you're visiting the island, we have a selection of farmers markets all around the island each week. And if you're here even for only a few days on the Garden Island, getting out to one of the local farmers markets is one of the true ways to connect with the local people and the essence of this beautiful island.
Indeed. And we know life is busy, so not every person can spend the amount of time necessary to grow all their own staples. But believe it or not, there are people out there who concentrate all of their efforts and energies on doing just that and making sure that they can grow the right crops at the right time and offer the most diversity that's possible, and that's what you're going to find when you visit our farmers markets.
And this being a Wednesday, the big farmers market on Kauai is at the Kapa'a Market, 3 p.m., and it's near the ballpark, and that's a bus stop as well to make it easy for people to get to. And just a fantastic market, lots of organic produce represented and lots of cultural foods you won't see elsewhere.
True.
And on other timely news, it is Earth Day today, a great celebration celebrated since 1970, thanks to Senator Gaylord Nelson, who at the time galvanized the efforts of the anti-war movement, just sort of that groundswell of focus that the grassroots efforts could change public policy, certainly with the war, as well as with the environment. And now, 45 years later, we continue to receive the benefits of this rallying point for humanity to come together to consider how can we love this beautiful Mother Earth. Here on Kauai, as with many places in the world, Earth Day is often celebrated on a weekend, either before or after, usually before. And we did have a great Earth Day celebration on Sunday up in Kalihiwai. Yet there is a Earth Day celebration happening right now today at Kauai Community College, which always has an Earth Day celebration. And this year, Eric Hansen with the Go Farm Hawaii program is hosting some hands-on activities to Malama, the campus. And so it's less of a talking about doing the right thing this year and more about doing the right thing on campus. So thanks, Eric, and thanks everybody at KCC for giving us an opportunity to come together and celebrate Earth Day. And another way to celebrate Earth Day, or in acknowledgement of the importance of the global perspective and the global mandate and certainty that we can work together to solve some of the problems that we're facing only if we come all together. There's a very exciting meeting that's going to be happening next year. It'll be happening over on Oahu in Honolulu, and it is the meeting of the World Conservation Conference. And this happens only every 4 years, and it's convened by an organization called IUCN, which is the International Union for the Conservation of Nature. It's the first time in its 65-year history that it's happened even anywhere in the United States, amazingly. Wow. And so we're very fortunate to have this this gathering happening, coming up. And to find out all about it, Chipper Wickman, CEO of the National Tropical Botanical Garden, will be holding a gathering and a talk to express the importance of this gathering to us. It's happening this coming Tuesday, April 28th, starting at 5:30 p.m. It's a free talk at the Kauai Community College cafeteria. And IUCN, in addition to the World Conservation Conference, or next to that, it's probably best known for the Red List of Endangered Species, which is kind of the global version of the U.S. Endangered Species List. However, it's not a politically influenced list like the Endangered Species Act, where the influence of whether or not a species is listed as endangered can have such great economic ramifications on particular commercial or private interests in the U.S. It's a very politically charged situation when species are either listed or delisted from the Endangered Species Act. By comparison, the IUCN Red List is done separate from that because it's not really tied to legislation. It doesn't have teeth, but it's more, perhaps more of a unbiased scientific analysis of each species, and I think the ultimate goal is to pretty much run every species known through the list. And a lot of times things are listed as apparently secure, but oftentimes they're considered threatened, and some of the really important work that IUCN does.
Yeah, I like that. It's a voluntary situation where we're sort of counting on people to use their own moral compass to do the right thing versus a mandatory sort of involuntary.
Right.
I think it works better that way when people get to choose.
Yes, and governments certainly can and do use it as the benchmark to trigger actions. But because it's an independent conservation organization based in Switzerland that actually coordinates these listings or these analyses of species, then it can't be monkeyed with as much. An amazing organization that really is made up of over 10,000 scientists from pretty much every country in the world donating their time to run the committees that lead the technical and the scientific and technical advisory mission of IUCN. It's coming here to Hawaii. Very exciting. Chipper Wickman from NTBG gives some of the best talks I've ever heard on conservation, so I can give it my high recommendation to consider his talk coming up here next Tuesday, April 28th, a free talk at KCC Cafeteria at 5:30 p.m. That's the way that I think I'm going to be able to celebrate Earth Day the most, is to focus my attention on how the world is looking to Hawaii to host this next international conference. Very exciting.
Indeed it is. Well, more on notable news is a little glimmer of hope, I think, speaking of voluntary actions. And I read this on globalgoodnews.com, which has been one of my favorite websites because it's good news. And basically, in 2014, 51% of garden plants sold at big box stores, I will not name them here, but I think you know what I'm talking about, contain levels of neonicotinoid pesticides that could harm or even kill bees. So the garden plants themselves, not so much talking about the product lines that these stores carry, has insecticides and pesticides and stuff. But as we all know, we need the bees, and so these retailers, it's kind of been a domino effect. One of them started it, and now the rest of them are sort of following along, are asking their suppliers not to use the neonicotinoids on the plants. And I am pretty sure that that's because we as customers have been asking the retailers to offer plants that are not treated with such pesticides. So according to this article, the plan is to phase out the use of neonicotinoid pesticides on the garden plants by 2019. I'm thinking, you know, can we just do that a little sooner? But, you know, things take time in that kind of world. So awesome, and kudos to them for even considering it at all.
Indeed. And interesting, though, the consideration of what would be proposed. So a concept that's been recently introduced come to light for me is the idea of no opposition without a proposition. So what is the alternative? And we certainly have organic options for pest and disease control. And so I'm hoping that the request to stop using the neonicotinoids is paired with suggestions on organic alternatives rather than just some other chemical-based pesticide that, if it's not poisoning the bees, it's poisoning our water or whatever it might be.
Something else. I agree. So we can grow really healthy, high-quality plants without toxic chemicals. I know that we can because we do it all the time.
You do indeed, and we do. So now we are going to focus in on our show today on soft line irrigation. Last week we spoke about the hard line or the pressurized system for irrigation, and that will only take us so far to the final solution of delivering water to the plants. So now we're going to talk about that final step. We designed a system. We've installed the supply lines, essentially. And in some cases, like Robin said, sometimes even the PVC or the hard line is used as the final supply solution. But in many cases, because of economic concern, consideration for ease of installation for the homeowner, and even for the flexibility of a commercial producer, we would choose to use soft line irrigation. So I'm going to turn it over to Robin for this discussion.
That's right. And when we say soft line, mainly I'm talking about poly tube, and I'm actually specifically talking about half-inch poly tube, mainly because that is the most widely available not only tubing, but parts, which become important. So there's some other products out there. The Rainbird systems are not technically half-inch tubing. It can cause a lot of fuss for people who perhaps got some of this 0.710 size tube that just is not compatible with half-inch parts. And also, we were discussing how 3/4-inch line is all but obsolete as well. There's not a whole lot of it out there. The fittings are hard to find. So we like straight-up half-inch tubing, although there are other types of, quote, hose to use, and some of them are just garden hoses. Sometimes a garden hose with a sprinkler attached to the end of it is the solution for our watering. And in that case, you know, not all hoses are created alike. There are some that are kind of a plastic type material that tend to kink and sort of hold their kinks. And when left out in the sun to bake, you know, day after day, get even more fragile.
We can't really blame them. We just are so hard on our irrigation system.
It's so true, but of all the hoses I've ever used, the ones that seem to hold up the best for me are the black rubber Craftsman hoses, which we all know Sears closed down here, and it was like, oh my God, where are we going to get hoses now? But we're lucky that Kmart actually carries the Craftsman line, and so they're still available. And it's not only that black rubber that's very flexible and doesn't seem to hold kinks very much. They hold up to sunshine. The male and female hose ends are made out of nickel instead of brass, which is a feature I like very much. So those have been my favorite.
And we would think, oh, rubber, a natural material, we're thinking more sustainably in a sense. And yet I read a small article recently saying that expanding rubber plantations continue to threaten the rainforest for clearing. So,
oh, and that's like a 50-year thing that's been going on, at least, maybe closer to 80 years. It is really hard to wrap your mind around it, but tires, all rubber starts with the sap of a plant. And there's something really unique about it, and millions of dollars of research has gone into rubber plantations, for sure.
Yeah.
Very interesting topic, which will go in, can go into depth a different time. But along the lines of hoses, there's also soaker hoses, which haven't necessarily been my favorite, but they do have their perfect application. I believe in a bed that's got some ground cover, and you want to just let it, the ground cover can kind of engulf the soaker hose if placed properly. But a similar and a little more sturdy solution is polytube called Netafim. Netafim has built-in emitters inside the tube itself, about every 12 inches or so. Mm-hmm. Going to hold up a lot longer, I'd say, than soaker hoses, but needs to be sort of snaked around so that the emitters are in the right place. But those hoses can be really good for ground cover areas in sort of in ornamental landscapes, I would think.
And we were talking earlier before the show started about the presence still here on Kauai of the T-tape, and that is certainly a soft line solution that people are using more in the commercial sense, but the unfortunateness of the ephemeral nature of this hose, of this irrigation line, it's so easy to damage, and fittings to repair damaged T-tape are so expensive that really the solution that growers use is that they throw it out season after season, and that's got to be bulking up our landfill pretty fast.
Sure, along with lots of other stuff, for sure. But yeah, T-tape is not something I've used in my home garden at all, and maybe the right thing for a large scale, but we're going to talk about polytube, and we're going to talk about half-inch polytube. And so you basically are going to start the polytube probably at a hose bib or a spigot. And so you have a hose end adapter that's going to take the polytube to connect it to either the spigot or a timer that is connected to the spigot.
Or a filter, perhaps, as well.
Or a filter. And when it comes to fittings, there's a few different kinds out there. There's compression lock fittings where the polytube is inside the fitting. And there's T-lock fittings where the polytube is outside the fitting with a screw-down sort of clamp that's just done by hand. It's a quick one. I like those better simply because they're more reusable. If you've ever tried to muscle a half-inch line out of a compression fitting, you can do it. But it's a lot harder. And the T-lock fittings, I just think, are more reusable, less disposable, which is why I like to recommend them. But we should start with timers, I guess. And timers are kind of a letdown. They're so necessary, but they're so also the quality of them is just not that great. I really haven't met a timer that I'm going to have a long-term relationship with.
Let's just say they're water resistant.
Yes.
And the problem, though, is that if we create a hood for the timer, the ants love to move into this dry
yes.
space.
Yes.
And even if we don't, the ants love to move into the timer, especially the battery compartment.
It's true. And they do chew away at the wires and stuff. So my standard for a long time has been dig timers, but, you know, I think they're being mass-produced on such a level now that maybe the quality isn't quite what it used to be. I'm not exactly sure. I certainly wish I had a better solution, although, you know, full-on irrigation timers with valves connected to them that's powered by real electricity is a solution, but that's a design element that you have to think about early on in your irrigation design so that you can run the electrical lines that will control those valves.
And so, yes, and some of those are controlled by battery, so you don't necessarily need a utility hookup, but those pieces also fail.
Yes.
And so if you're getting a timer, you're going to be doing some maintenance to it no matter what, it seems.
No doubt about it. And so we have our timer, and we want to run our line, and we're going to decide what kind of emitters we want to put in the line in order to bring water to our plants. So emitters are just a really interesting topic to me, because different plants like different kinds of watering. So it really does depend on what you're planting. If we're talking about ornamental landscaping and sort of drought-tolerant shrubbery, good chance that just a drip emitter, a dripper, otherwise known as, they come in pressure-compensating drippers. There's flag drippers are pretty common and inexpensive, and there's also adjustable drippers. And all of these punch into the polytube. Although I have to say my favorite, hands down, which we've been using for years, only because I also do the maintenance of the yard, and the weed eater is the worst enemy of the drip line.
And the trees.
And the trees, and lots of different things. So there's a lot of different ways to protect our line from the weed eater, and one of these is an emitter that I can only find at DripWorks. We've talked about this place before, DripWorks.com, and it's the VibraClean emitter. It was formerly known as the Catif, but the VibraClean is an emitter that punches into the tube and actually is completely flush with the drip tube itself, which means it can get hit by the weed eater and nothing will happen to it. It also tends to not get, its name speaks to this, that it doesn't tend to get clogged up very well, easily, and it will just keep flowing. I've really never seen them fail, which is really cool, because not a lot of that in the irrigation world. They come in several different sizes. There's 1/2 gallon per hour, 1 gallon per hour, and 2 gallon per hour. So what I've done in some tree plantings is make a big loop of polytube at the right distance, kind of right under the, quote, drip line of the leaves of the tree, and put, you know, maybe 5 of these emitters. Maybe if I do 5 1 gallon per hour and I leave the system on for 1/2 an hour, I'm getting about 2.5 gallons of water to my plant, and that's a pretty decent amount. They work really well, so I definitely recommend those. However, they're pretty difficult to put into the line. They're a little bit wider, and an installation tool is required to purchase with those, because none of your typical punches will work in getting those VibraClean emitters into the polytube.
Mm-hmm. And Robin, as far as the gallons per hour that you would choose, I know that that's related to the total number of emitters that you have on the system.
Yes.
If you have too many gallons per hour leaving out of too many emitters, you're not going to have consistent flow amongst all the emitters.
Correct.
And then also we have different stature plants and a desire to either irrigate somewhat more shallowly or irrigate at a deeper level for a tree. So if I'm using a higher gallon per hour emitter, I'm assuming that's a good choice for a larger tree, because the chance that the water would infiltrate the soil to a deeper level. Is that right?
Yes. Well, perhaps. Really, the difference is that if you just have one dripper on a large tree, you're just watering one spot, mm-hmm. which is why I like to use less gallons per hour but more individuals of those emitters, so that the water is a little more spread out around the planting. And that's just for home use. For farmers, generally for trees, are going to use micro sprinklers, which are on a spaghetti tube that mist water out into a certain range. But again, the calculations of how many of those can go on a line with and keeping top pressure the whole time, the calculations to which can be found in a book called Landscape Irrigation Design and Management by Stephen W. Smith. And that book reads like a textbook, is indeed a textbook, and can help people to make those calculations. Every system is different. I basically try to err on the low side. I'd rather my emitters have more pressure than less. And so I'll just finagle a way to put more lines in so I can have less emitters per line and reach the maximum pressure. But it depends. And also the soil itself is going to absorb water in different ways. Sandy soils versus loamy soils versus heavy clay soils are going to accept the water in different patterns. And so you kind of need to marry your soil type with the plant type, and then the amount of pressure you have is pretty much the three things that need to be calculated in. But spaghetti tube is, let's just say, also kind of an enemy of the weed eater. It gets really tangled up in there really quick, and so it's another good reason to mulch underneath our trees if we are going to choose micro sprinklers, to have mulch down so that we don't need to weed eat so close to the trees and we won't get ourselves all entangled. It really is a bummer when you just spent 3 hours weed eating and then you need to go spend another 2 hours fixing all the irrigation that you destroyed during. And this happens. This is pretty common. I think it's pretty, what's the word I'm looking for? It's just a bummer for people. You know, it's discouraging to get out there and do stuff. So we use lots of staples, lots and lots and lots of staples. Staples are available at Home Depot, but you can get larger boxes at Kauai Irrigation. And we staple the heck out of that tube just every 6 inches. It won't get sucked up into the mower. Won't get sucked up into the weed eater. There's a lot of benefits to lots of staples.
Ground staples are a staple in your garden.
In your irrigation system, no doubt. So is there any other aspects about drip line?
I think that it seems that oftentimes people will find it beneficial to have a pressure-reducing compensator. And maybe there's less need for it on your system because you're well pressured. Is that correct?
That's right. I'm looking for a pressure upper personally than a downer. But yeah, every part of the island, depending on your water source, you're going to have sort of a different main pressure, mm-hmm. and that may need to be reduced to come down all the way to half inch.
If we don't, then our emitters can often pop off, or ultimately the system's going to fail at its weakest point. And so there are often times you will find pressure reducing fittings that take it down to 20 psi. I think that's the common psi standard for a drip system.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's one thing that we would put at the head of this soft line system. And then another really important thing can be a filter as well.
Correct, yes.
So the challenge here is to not let the drip emitters or the emitters of many different descriptions clog with particulate sediment that might be in that water. And so different systems for filtering that out are available. They're easy to install. It's important that you get them on the right direction. The water only kind of goes one way. And oftentimes people will install them backward. So it's important to get it going in the right direction. And then periodic flushing of the filter inside can make a dramatic difference as to whether or not you're getting appropriate water pressure.
That's right. And, you know, the most common introduction of particulates into the line I've noticed is when you do a repair. And there's little shavings of PVC from when you had to, you know, it got cracked or something happened to it and maybe a little mud got in the line, or maybe as you're fixing it, some pieces of PVC, and those little micro pieces of white PVC can just totally clog up a small micro sprinkler really fast.
Right.
And so my recommendation is when you do repairs to go ahead and open a large line, either a hose spigot or something to flush water where you make the opening, of course, in your big system, which is your tank, and you can flush out any particulates that happened after a break in the line out of one spot instead of waiting for the next system that goes on and all that stuff is going to rush to there, wherever it is.
Right. So with this half-inch poly line, when we install it, now we've attached our emitters, whatever they may be, it's a really good idea to actually flush those half-inch lines first. There's a figure-eight
closure at the end, or there's various different ways to close the end of that half-inch line, but to run the system first to flush out any particulate before we close it up and then force the water toward the emitters is always something you'll be happy you remembered to do.
Yes, the figure eights are the best hose polytube ends that I've found yet for that very reason. Mm-hmm. Because if there does become a break and some mud gets sucked in there, you can easily flush it out.
Yep. So no need with this VibraClean emitter. It's not a self-flushing. You can't open them.
That's right.
So you have to flush from the end. And that doesn't seem to be a problem. They don't clog up on you.
No. So far, not had any problems with that. They lay down water really nicely. And they never get damaged by any kind of mowing or, you know, lawn maintenance.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Right on. Well, thank you so much for that, Robin. And we want to let listeners know that this is In the Garden on the Farm on Kauai Community Radio. We're here until 1 o'clock, and we've got Kauai Vibrations coming up from 1 to 3, Shaka Kayaka with the Papule Show from 3 to 5, and Kauai Surf Stories is coming after that. Lots of great programming. Please stay tuned. And throughout the week, you can find the KKCR schedule at kkcr.org. If you missed any of the In the Garden on the Farm shows, you can check those out on the audio archive page there at KKCR. And we want to let you know, too, that the Spring Fund Drive is coming up. It's beginning on May 11th through the 21st. We want to invite you to become an early bird for a chance to win a two-night stay at the Hanalei Bay Resort. You can mail in, call in, donate online. If you register by the 10th, which is just the day before the fund drive, you will be automatically entered into the early bird drawing for that two-night stay at Hanalei Bay Resort. As well, you could become a wave rider. It's a great opportunity to advertise or to let people know. It's not an advertisement, but it is a way to let the community know that your business or your event, or maybe just you, have supported Kauai Community Radio. During every two-hour program for the duration of the 11-day pledge drive, your Wave Rider message will be played. And Wave Rider forms are available on the website as well. So please come and celebrate the Spring Fun Drive with us. And as a specific plea to the In the Garden on the Farm listeners, we really appreciate each and every week we get feedback from people saying, love the show, and now we're going to ask you to show your love in this very particular way to help us contribute to the ongoing operation of this studio. So we really encourage you to save up a few pennies so that when we do our two fund drive shows, and In the Garden on the Farm will be on air two different times, the 13th and the 20th, we really are looking forward to some of our listeners, a lot of our listeners, calling up and pledging even a small amount or a large amount would be great too.
Yes, absolutely. Well, thank you, Paul. Just to wrap up and segue into our next segment, in garden beds, I like overhead watering better than drip irrigation. And it's mainly because inside the fence line of my garden is really one garden, even though there's nine little beds in there. Sort of one big place, mm-hmm. and I want a huge earthworm population in there. It's really, to me, the most important thing. And so what I found by overhead watering is I encourage the worms to just move about because the trails are getting watered, everything is kind of wet, and they can migrate and move as they wish inside this area. And so that is a perfect underground environment for earthworms. And now we're going to talk a little bit more about earthworms.
On Earth Day.
Yeah. And I'd like to dispel a myth right off the bat that they grow into two worms when you cut them. This is false.
If only it were that easy. If only life were that easy.
If only. So you're really just killing them. And once your soil and your garden has a well-established population, I recommend using the digging fork to turn the beds instead of a shovel, which is has more of a chance of hitting a worm dead on and cutting it in two, or certainly even rototillers being even harder on the earthworm population once you've gotten your soil to a particular tilth.
Well, we love the earthworms, and we want to honor and thank Dr. Hector Valenzuela for researching and publishing a nice little paper, Earthworms in the Farm.
And I love how he says, in the farm.
Yeah.
They're not on, they're in.
And we're really happy that Hector's going to be joining us this weekend for the agroforestry workshop. And sorry to say, no more seats available for that. But Hector comes to Kauai on a regular basis for all manner of purposes, to serve as an extension agent for people with organic crop production activities or questions. And it's great to know that people at the University of Hawaii's College of Tropical Agriculture are focusing in on some of the most diminutive yet important members of the agricultural ecosystem, the earthworms.
No doubt. And so what do earthworms do besides eat soil? Well, they by eating it, they improve the soil structure itself. Burrowing that they do increases the aeration and the microbial activity of the soil, which we know is very good. In fact, microbial activity is studied to be the main source of CO2 for plants. Plants use basically what the microbes are respiring out. It's right there in the soil. The plants don't necessarily need any atmospheric CO2 because the microbial activity that's happening under the soil is producing enough for them.
Wow, that's really surprising to me.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Water absorption is 4 to 10 times greater in fields with earthworm burrows. So that helps reduce runoff and decrease erosion. Got any other great facts about what earthworms do?
Earthworms, they're great at catching fish.
Yes, they are.
It's definitely a good indicator of that your soil's heading in the right direction. And a nice thing about earthworms is that the soil that they live in almost invariably has eggs in it. And so even if you don't see any earthworms in a bit of soil that you may be moving, you're probably inoculating with soil that is within the habitat of earthworms. Can help perpetuate new earthworm colonies. And in some of the really depleted soils that I find underfoot, moving some of that soil, I'm hoping borrowing a bit of topsoil from here or there can help to establish new colonies of earthworms. Earthworms are not actually a native species to Hawaii. They were not here pre-human contact, but they play such a crucial part of the ecosystem now, and we'd be in a difficult space without them. So yes, I would say pick up that digging fork and treat the earthworms gently so that they can continue to provide the many benefits and the incredible castings that enrich the soil.
No doubt. So how do we get more earthworms in our gardens is a question I had. And one way is to grow organically, because there's so many chemicals out there that are used in gardening that are not good for earthworms, which I'll get to in a moment. But organic growing, using mulch and compost applications, are one way to encourage more earthworms in our fields. In Hector's paper, he also studied that no-till fields had higher numbers of earthworms. So not tilling as much or tilling more gently would be a way to get more earthworms.
Let them do the tilling.
Yes, which they do. Some of them have been known to go down like 3-4 feet. Wow. They burrow directly straight down and they take nutrients from up there, almost like dung beetles, right, down into their burrows. Cover crops, like legumes, have been known also to increase populations of earthworms. So earthworms like leguminous cover crops. And so what is bad for earthworms? What do they not like? Well, fungicides containing copper or zinc are not good for earthworms, and a lot of the commercial fungicides do use copper, and copper is not good for us, but copper is definitely not good for the earthworms. Carbamate fungicides like 7 is one of those. That's just kind of a nuker, nukes just about everybody. Petro-fertilizers, so fertilizers that are made from petrochemicals, like straight urea, can burn and kill the earthworms. Even the organic version of sluggo, as we've talked about a couple times, is bad for earthworms. And lastly, organophosphate insecticides, which I didn't check my references here, but I think that might be like glyphosate?
Glyphosate, yes.
Yeah. So those are bad for earthworms, and this is one thing I've learned, is that we don't want to be bad to the earthworms. Just like we don't want to be bad to the bees, we don't want to be bad to the earthworms. These are our friends. They are doing magic to the soil on such record amounts every single day, all day in, day out, over and over and over again. We need to protect their colonies.
Yes. They are doing God's work. They are, in fact, God. So let us worship, let us honor the earthworms, and let us turn our sights as well to a couple of announcements as we finish up the show today, some activities that you might be interested in. I mentioned already the talk on the World Conservation Conference coming to Hawaii, happening next Tuesday evening at 5:30 p.m. at the Kauai Community College cafeteria. CEO of NTBG, Chipper Wickman, giving that talk. More information at ntbg.org, and then click the news link at the top of the page to get more information about that. We have a home gardening class coming up Saturdays, May 2nd and 9th at Kauai Community College with Master Gardener Instructor and UH Extension Agent Richard Abesu. To register, call KCC's Continuing Office of Education and Training at 245-8318. Also an Introduction to Beekeeping class with Jimmy Trujillo, also at KCC, on the 9th and the 16th of May. And great to get started for your beekeeping interests. I just love the idea that more and more beekeepers, every time Jimmy holds this class, that there's yet another round of beekeepers getting in on the act. And beekeepers are, across the board, I would say, everyone I've ever met really care about the environment, and they're very sensitive to the environment, and we need more beekeepers.
Another brood, so to speak.
We want to let you know, if you want your ag-related event or announcement shared on air, please email it a couple of weeks in advance to inthegardenonthefarm@gmail.com. To hear previous broadcasts of the show, you can go to kkcr.org, click the audio archive tab at the top of the page. And we want to thank the other members of the In the Garden on the Farm team. Mac is in studio with us today. Thank you so much, Mac. Our engineer, Jack, our webmasteress, Laura Christine, our station manager, Dean. Everybody here lends a hand and helps out. Dove is always here and super helping out as well. So thanks, everybody. We want to encourage you to tune in again
next week for more stimulating conversation on our relationship with the life of the land that gives us life.
Aloha, everybody.
Aloha.
And stay tuned for Kauai Vibrations. This is KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea, K284AL, Haleiwa, K224CQ in Moloa'a. And we're going to get to some great music here coming up soon. We have one of these beautiful vintage CD players, funny enough, CD as a technology. Now a vintage technology, but thanks to the good engineers here at the studio, we keep all the equipment running beautifully.
creature on this earth.